You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're taking a look at some of the big news in national politics. The U.S. Senate is getting set to vote on a resolution that would block President Trump's national emergency declaration until he vetoes it. House committees are seeking financial documents from the White House and many individuals after Michael Cohen's testimony. And the Democratic National Committee is deciding how to handle debates in a ever more crowded field of primary candidates. Amanda Turkle is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Huffington Post. Amanda, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, last week, a resolution to block that declaration of a national emergency, it passed in the House. Now the Senate has to vote on it. Apparently, they're preparing for that vote, and it looks like there might be enough Republicans joining Democrats to pass this. Who are some of these crossover votes, Amanda?
Sure. Well, so far, Republicans Rand Paul from Kentucky, Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, Tom Tillis from North Carolina, and Susan Collins from Maine are the senators who said they're against it. And it's going to, the resolution disapproving of what Trump wants to do is going to pass the Senate, which is pretty remarkable because the Senate is controlled by Republicans. Rand Paul is opposed to it. He's a libertarian. He says unconstitutional in his opinion. And he says he knows of at least 10 Republican senators who have said they're against it. I don't know if there really will be 10 Republicans crossing over, but it's a pretty strong rebuke of the president in the fact that it's not going to pass a chamber controlled by his own party.
It'll pass both chambers, it looks like, but then the president can veto it, and then there's not a two-thirds majority in either house, right, to override that.
Right, exactly. So ultimately, Trump is going to get his way, but it's going to be embarrassing. Trump is going to use his first veto on this, which is, you know, the people who are the lawyers who are going to be suing Trump over this, saying that this national emergency declaration is unconstitutional, this congressional resolution helps them because they say, look, he's going around Congress. Congress didn't give him the money for this wall. And they said that his national emergency declaration isn't constitutional and they disapprove of it. So this is twice that he's going around Congress. And so they think it will help their case in getting what Trump's doing thrown out.
Now, Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said he didn't like this national emergency idea. He didn't want the president to do this. Could you talk about the position now Mitch McConnell is in trying to work with the president and seeing at least a partial revolt of his own caucus?
Well, Mitch McConnell is doing what he always does, which is ultimately he stands with the president. Even if he doesn't like it, even if privately he disagrees, he is a party guy, and he is interested in making sure that Republicans have power and doing what Trump wants. And so in this case, he did say that he didn't like it, but he's going to, you know, support Trump. And, I mean, you know, there are other Republicans who may vote against this. I mean, there are Republicans like maybe Ted Cruz or Mike Lee who don't like it on constitutional grounds and also say, look, if we're doing this now, a Democratic president could do it on climate change or something like that. There are Republicans who are locked in tough reelection races in more purple states, people like Cory Gardner in Colorado. And then there are people who don't like the fact that Trump is going to use money meant for the military to build this wall when maybe it could be better used for other things.
Do we know when this vote is actually supposed to happen?
Not yet. It's expected to be next week sometime, but there's still no date.
I want to move on to some other big news now. We had, of course, Michael Cohen, former Trump attorney, testifying before a House committee. He testified before a few committees, one of them publicly. Now some Democratic-led committees are asking for documents from the White House and from Trump associates. What kind of things are they looking for?
Sure. This is Trump's nightmare, and this is sort of what he knew was coming if Democrats took control of the House. And so the House Judiciary Committee has sent out more than 80 letters asking for documents relating to Trump. And, you know, these are going out to people like Jared Kushner, for example, his son-in-law, and people who have worked with Trump for years, Alan Weisselberg and his business partners. And so they are looking for anything about whether Trump has engaged in obstruction of justice, corruption, abuse of power. These letters have gone out to the NRA. And what it makes clear is that, you know, Democrats are not just looking at one thing with Trump. They are casting as wide a net as possible, and they are, you know, just hoping to get documents to see what he has done on basically everything.
And what's been the response from the president and his spokespeople?
Well, Trump's response is basically what you expect. You know, this is a witch hunt. Democrats are abusing their power. The White House is saying that they will cooperate when, you know, they've been preparing for this for quite a while. They will cooperate when they think it's appropriate, but they're obviously going to try to limit the scope of the investigations. They'll claim executive privilege when they feel like they need to preserve confidentiality. And they will obviously challenge some of what Democrats are doing. But they said they would like to be cooperative as possible. You know, we will see how cooperative or what their definition of cooperative really is.
Talking to Amanda Turkle from the Huffington Post, looking at some of the top news in national politics. On a related note, Amanda, speaking of requesting documents, a House committee also looking for, this is the House Oversight Committee now, looking for documents related to Jared Kushner's security clearance. Now, talk about some of the reporting that led us up to this point.
Sure. Well, I mean, this is already an example of where the White House is not being cooperative. So Jared Kushner, he did not get the top security clearance that basically the White House requested for him because, and we don't know why exactly, but it seemed to be, there seemed to be indications that it was because of his and his family's business dealings, their real estate deals, especially when it came to deals with foreign countries. He could be compromised somehow. We don't really know. And that's what Democrats want to find out. And so Trump has claimed, and Jared Kushner did eventually get a security clearance. Trump has said that he didn't intervene, but there's been new reporting showing that he actually did intervene. And he did overrule, for example, White House Chief of Staff John Kelly, and say that he wanted Kushner to get a security clearance, even though the professionals didn't recommend it. And so now Democrats want the documents about his security clearance. And the White House is saying that they're not going to turn them over.
What are members of the House Oversight Committee saying they want to review and why they want to review it?
Well, I think they want to know why this top advisor, senior advisor in the White House, who's honestly in some ways functioning as Trump's chief of staff, you know, why he might be compromised. Why can't this guy get a security clearance? Is there something they should know that's in the public interest? That's sort of what they're looking for.
And then, Amanda, you've written about this. So we have this presidential election coming up. I don't know if people are aware of that in 2020. And a lot of Democratic candidates, and we're starting to see signs of how the Democratic National Committee will handle debates with this growing pool of candidates. What kind of rules are we hearing about now?
So the first two debates, they're going to be in June and July. As you know, the field is already massive. At most, the Democrats are going to allow 20 people to participate. I don't know if there are going to be 20 candidates who qualify, but there could be 20 candidates. And the debates could be spread out over two nights, consecutive nights. And so Democrats have said that in order to qualify, you have to reach 1% support in at least three separate polls, or, and this is new, a candidate has to raise money from at least 65,000 unique donors and a minimum of 200 unique donors per state in at least 20 states. So basically, they're trying to do the standard thing of, you know, are you getting high polling numbers? You can be in. But they also want to allow for the fact that maybe someone isn't registering in polls, but they're getting a groundswell of grassroots support through fundraising. They get to be in the debate, too. I don't know if there is going to be someone who maybe reaches number two, the fundraising thing, and not the polling thing. But they are doing that in big part because they got so much criticism in 2016 that they didn't pay enough attention to Bernie Sanders.
When Republicans had a lot of candidates last year, we had what people called kind of the main debate and the JV debate, where the lower polling candidates met on a separate stage, a separate event that of course then got less attention. It looks like Democrats aren't going to take that approach. They'll just kind of mix and match.
Right, right. It's going to be random. The Republicans got a ton of criticism from that, and it was sort of considered to be a disaster. And so this time it's going to be random. I don't know exactly how they're going to randomize it, but, you know, so you could have a big mix of the front runners and lesser known candidates on the stage over two nights if the networks decide to do that.
And one more bit of information. It looks like the DNC will not have a debate hosted by Fox News. This after a New Yorker report by Jane Mayer tracking the coordination, which she found to be overlap between the Trump White House, Fox News channel, and the Trump campaign. What do you make of that decision by the Democrats to say, okay, no Fox for the debates?
I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, they were getting, you know, there were a lot of Democrats who really don't want Fox News to have a debate. You know, they're considered, based on that New Yorker article, a propaganda outlet for Trump and for Republicans, but mostly Trump, honestly. And so the thinking goes, why should they get a debate for the Democratic primary? You know, there were other Democrats who said, like, we need to reach, they're a network with a huge audience. We need to reach those voters, too. They should get to do one. But ultimately, the DNC decided that, based on everything they read from that New Yorker piece and what they know about Fox, they don't get to do one.
Finally, Amanda, on a non-political note, you had tweeted about this sad news. Luke Perry, Beverly Hills 90210 star, he was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie. He's been in Riverdale most recently. Passed away this week at age 52. This was a part of your growing up TV habit, it sounds like.
He was. I mean, obviously, you know, obviously we were all very sad in my office. And I think online everyone was mourning Luke Perry. I mean, I remember him when I was a kid watching 90210. But more recently, I'm a fan of Riverdale on Netflix. And so I think he's been great as the dad, as Archie's dad in, on Riverdale. So, you know, it was very, very sad news.
A sad, sad moment, of course, for his family and friends and for TV viewers around the world. Amanda, thanks as always for joining us.
Great, thank you.
That's Amanda Turkle, Washington Bureau Chief for The Huffington Post, with us for a weekly look at the top news in national politics.